Hello and welcome to the Ask the Mouse podcast for January. In a break from the usual way we do these things, we're recording straight after a game, which is the Chelsea game we've just lost. I'm joined, as usual, by Dave.
Hello.
And Elliot from Yankee Gunner.
Hello.
Boys, I think after the loss to City, Arsene came out and said that we were too timid in the first half and that had cost us. Why do we seem to be such a team which is only capable of playing a single half of football at a time? You look at games like Reading and that, and it's taken often big second half performances for us to either get results or to kind of even just stem the bleeding. We played better against City as well in the second half. I don't get why we're not just Jekyll and Hyde over the course of the season now. We've seen Jekyll and Hyde within games. Dave, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's weird. Historically, it seems to be a problem we've had for years and years now. I mean, at Highbury, we used to go out and batter teams within the first 20, 30 minutes. That's just not the case anymore. I think what you can, one of the real defining qualities of the, you know, two distinct Arsenal teams Wenger's had now at the Emirates is we just start games terribly. I remember, we're really goal shy in first half of games, especially at home. And, you know, today again, the performance today was dreadful. I mean, that's two games in the last week where we've gone down, 2-0 within the opening 20, 25 minutes?
There's a statistic, I think, floating around that says we've only scored, I don't know, 7 or 8 goals in the first 30 minutes all season.
We were fucking asleep today. I mean, absolutely, the defence was nowhere. Like, Mertzak had no idea where Matt was for that first goal. Like, Sanya, who was horrendous today, he looked like he was carrying an injury. He just completely lost Matt. I mean, the finish, as we're seeing now on Sky goal, was very good, which is making me cry.
We were watching
cry,
Sky out the corner of our
eyes. Like, we're just so ragged at the back. Thing, like, it was so frustrating because we started to control the tempo of the game in the second half, but you wondered then whether there was whether that was just Chelsea happy to give us more of the ball. And
they've been nervous at home recently as well, and this is a comparatively fragile Chelsea side. You made an interesting point while we were watching the game, Dave, that one of the things about Chelsea, and although they're going through some transition now, is that everyone kind of bangs on about all the instability at the club, but what they've actually did for a long period when they were winning trophies under Ancelotti and obviously Mourinho and Hiddink was keep that core group of players together, which we've singularly failed to do. Elliot, Dave mentioned Sanya didn't have a particularly brilliant game. I was troubled by the fact that they seemed to keep looking for kind of the overlap for him over on the right flank, which he just wasn't making. He looked really leaden, and he went down holding his ankle in the first half. Is that a guy playing hurt to you, or has he lost confidence, or what do you think's happened to him?
I don't know. I mean, look, I think in general you have to take the positives out of a game like this.
If you could see me now, I was looking at Dave, absolutely.
Hell, you're more pissed than I thought.
No, I'm kidding. We're shit. Sanya was terrible. It's not the first time recently he has been. You could say maybe it's contract issues. You know, his head just isn't in it anymore. He's definitely lost a step, but the mistakes he's making almost seem like concentration mistakes. I'm not really sure. We cannot get across over the first man, and he is particularly guilty of that. But, you know, it's weird. If you look at this game, this is what's so hard about Arsenal, right? What happened in this game is we came out and we were overrun in midfield because we didn't really have an enforcer in midfield who could, you know, really, put their fingerprints on the game, that couldn't really grab the midfield by the scruff of the neck. And then, you know, in the final third, we didn't have that top-quality striker who could take the chance when it came to us. And it's so strange because no one could have predicted that defensive midfielder and center forward would be a need for this team. there's no way you could have known that. And so, you know, I have real no, I'm kidding. Of course we knew that. So, I mean, it's just hilarious because all the problems we have are like exactly what you'd expect to have from not having the players you need. And I feel like our podcasts are just, why did we sell Song? Why did we sell Van Persie Redux? But, like, that's our entire season right now.
Someone made the point to me online during the week that a lot of the problems with this squad would be fixed if you brought in a decent central midfielder and a world-class striker. And you go, like, that's
yeah,
the two guys.
Yeah, then we comfortably finish fourth.
Well, but I think that's what we're playing for, Dave. I mean, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, there was a point rightly made, I think, during the game. I saw people saying, going into the market will not fix the things that are wrong with this team. And I think that's correct. If you look at the defending in that first half, the inability to control the midfield, and I came off the back of the Swansea game feeling quite positive about kind of the idea of having Cazorla wide and the Coquelin Diaby thing in the middle with Wilshere pushed further up. But really, it was another false dawn, and we've had a lot of false dawns. There's different ways of looking at it. On a really kind of macro level, you have to say, and I remember like the penny kind of dropping with me, I think, when I read a thing by Tim at 7am where he just methodically went through what the defence had done in terms of goals conceded and what types of goals over the last 5 years. And there was a clear, you know, demonstrable decline over that period of time. Now, you couple that with the fact that we have consistently sold our high-value players while retaining our overpaid medium value players, and there would be no logical conclusion you could draw other than that will be a team that will struggle and will decline. And I see a lot of people saying, well, if only they were more passionate, or they don't look like they're trying hard enough, they need to work more. And there's some truth in that, no doubt, but the Premier League is full of teams which have plenty of passion and work pretty hard. And the reason why Arsenal in the past has knocked off teams like that relatively comfortably is because we've had simply better individual talents. And if you keep sending guys away, and I have really, really little sympathy with, like, people on a micro level make cases for, well, but the situation with Nasri was this, but the situation with Cesc was this, and the situation with Robin was this. And you can make different individual cases, but the long-term trend, I'll stop this now because you've all heard it plenty of times before, is of course of incredible turnover. And you come back to the idea that Chelsea, however much we hate them, for a long period have retained the spine of that side, and that's Terry, Cashley, the keeper, Lampard, Ballack for a while, and then Drogba up until last year, and Lampard, you know. And that's how you build a successful side on a really, really obvious basic level. So,
and wrapping things up.
that's sorted.
But Dave, you made the point, didn't you, during the game that Chelsea have sacked a lot of managers in what people, you know, in inverted commas, regard as unfairly or preposterously, but almost every single manager there has won plenty.
We'll see now if this annual crisis, you know, results in a double. In fact, two doubles, one of a Champions League. I'll fucking take crisis at Arsenal any day of the week with a good kind that actually sees you win fucking transfers. I mean,
trophies, that's a Freudian
slip. Yeah. Give me Cavani. Yeah, I mean, it's just it's baffling to me now. I cannot understand the continued inaction in the January transfer window. I mean, it's massively, massively clear the squad's in dire need of reinforcement. You know, we're so lacking in so many positions. And you know, we've got at least two sides better than us in the league just now. I mean, in directly competing for those third and fourth
spots. When you
looked
at the bench today, David, I think the point was well made by pretty much everyone that there was no obvious.
Yeah, not a single
game changer
player who you think, oh, he's going to come on and have a positive match-changing effect in this game. I mean, we brought on Arshavin with 5 minutes ago. I didn't recognise him. He had like a fucking Beatles haircut, and I thought it was Rositsky for a second.
I squinted and hoped we'd bought Leighton Baines. But yeah, left back's probably not the problem. Elliot, what are your kind of thoughts? I mean, Dave has made the point that, you know, you could. There's not long to go now. But even if you brought a couple of players in, there's nothing to say they wouldn't get sucked into the kind of malaise that seems to afflict all the personnel. I mean, what are your kind of hopes? I wrote that thing a few weeks ago about the kind of making a comparison between Arsenal and kind of this sort of shambling horde of zombies, and I still really struggled to see obvious directions from which change could come.
Well, the problem is, I mean, first of all, people want things to be black and white. So when you make them black and white, the arguments start to fall apart because they either want a player to be shit or, quote, world class. They want us to be awesome or world class, you know, or title worthy. And that's just not true. The margins are very, very small. And incrementally, we've become a little less good to the point now where you look up and you're miles away. I compare it to like being on a boat in the ocean. You only have to be 1 degree off course to wind up 500 miles from your destination.
Well, especially if you stay on that course for a long time. And we've been
that's
on,
what I mean.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, for me, you know, it's such a convenient excuse to say, well, you know, the same different players keep making the same mistakes at Arsenal, so how is buying going to fix anything? Well, I'd sure love to see if it would. I think there's a few issues. We clearly lack depth, and a lot of the performances you're seeing now are tired performances. They're not performances from bad players. No one thinks that Jack or Cazorla are you know, bad players. You know, I don't think anyone would say that, but we're seeing some. I mean, Jack was obviously heroic against Swansea, but
I thought he was,
you know,
poor. I thought he was poor today.
I thought he was a little jaded today.
Yeah.
And Santi Cazorla is clearly worn out, and we saw what happened to Arteta, who actually broke down from it. So adding depth, I mean, I look at Yossi Benayoun last year, classic example of a player who gave us something extra, played some big games, gave us some key performances. No one's going to go out and vote for Yossi Benayoun for Ballon d'Or, but he was an important squad player. And I feel like we just don't have enough of those experienced heads who can come in a key moment and give us a performance to help spell some of the players that are putting in too many shifts.
And when you see a guy like Benayoun also, I mean, it's easy to forget that Benayoun, you know, he was never our player, but effectively was removed from the squad, obviously by going back after his loan spell in the summer. And then you look at the beginning of this month and seeing Schumacher and Giroud, neither of whom made the bench with any regularity, but you would be hard-pressed to say that the squad is strengthened by an absence. Like, in fact, that's illogical.
Well, I don't know.
I don't understand
going
anymore.
To the AFCON, maybe.
But I don't understand the thinking anymore. Like, I don't understand it at all. And I wrote a thing actually for a new thing we're launching at work called Football Weekly, and I wrote a thing about trying to decode Arsene during the transfer window, and I was sort of, you know, it was easy to pull up plenty of quotes which seemed like vaguely contradictory, but actually when you get past the ifs and buts of it, there seems to be actually a fairly consistent message, which is I think this squad is good enough, and I just don't see what he sees on the training ground or during matches that we are somehow missing. And Dave, you floated the idea that we were trying to think of other Champions League clubs which would not even be countenancing the idea that a change of manager is the way to go.
Sorry, this answer might be semi-distracted because I'm having to endure a Van Persie montage of United goals out of your iPad about 6 inches from my face. Yeah, I mean, the continued inaction, as I said before, is baffling. I think, you know, because of the crippling infrastructure at the club that, you know, goes back to that zombie apocalypse blog you wrote after Bradford, is the infrastructure isn't at the club to, you know, to get rid of Wenger, which means that these continuing, you know, essentially course of action that is not in any way defensible, into, you know, asset stripping season after season after season, not bringing the requisite talent. You know, the squad was too thin when you had the likes of Cesc and Nasri and Van Persie. That's why you could never make, you know, the step up to win the title. Now that, you know, we've lost those generally world-class players, the squad's no bigger. We're as thin as we've ever been. Any other, you know, top European club, Wenger would be out of a job. It's only because it seems that, you know, the minimum requirement each season is somewhat lowered. Like, a couple of seasons ago, we're, you know, bullish at the start of every season. Yeah, title, Champions League, Champions League. That's not even the talk anymore. It's just, yes, finish fourth, force a trophy. You know, and that will, you know, we're going to miss out on even that bare minimum required in this season because we're not finishing fourth with the squad unless there's significant action done in the next 10 days.
Elliot, we said over email in the build-up to doing this podcast and to watching the Chelsea game that it would go one way or the other because we'd hopefully either win and we'd bounce into it all positively and perhaps not be that worried about things around the wider things around the club.
The impending apocalypse. Yeah.
The apocalypse would seem like a distant memory for a little bit. But or we would, you know, struggle and we'd end up coming in a bit too raw and maybe saying things that were hyperbole. But in a funny way, it was that classic sort of Arsenal performance where, like, in the first half, you were reading stuff where people, and, you know, the mood is so sensitive now, where people were going pretty weapons free, and then because a decent shift was put in the second half, but we still don't get the points. There's that kind of like, well, there's that niggling thing in the back of my mind of like, well, they can do it, but the reality is like, let's take the handbrake off ourselves. What do you really think? I mean, would you welcome a change at this point?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all,
that was a long question.
An opportunity to advance my agenda because I was promised at least some period of this pod devoted to complaining about how shit Giroud is. So I'm going to use this as that moment, just really quickly. He's shit. Like, I'm sorry. You know, I see people slating Walcott at every opportunity, but falling all over themselves.
I
thought Walcott was lively. He scares defenders. And you know what? Goals are, I know it's so cliche to say goals change games, but Theo had one presentable opportunity, finished beautifully. Giroud had a chance to totally change the narrative of this game in the 8th minute or whatever it was, and he completely shit the bed.
Do you know what that reminded me of, actually, is the drum when we lost to Chelsea, and when we always used to lose to Chelsea, and Koscielny, I think, hit the bar quite early on.
Yeah,
with
a
header.
Game,
yep.
Yeah, and they scored fairly swiftly afterwards.
Right up the pitch and scored.
Two seasons ago.
You know what? It's funny, because at one point I was writing, you know, one of an infinite number of tweets making fun of Torres. And I stopped and I thought to myself, as shit as Torres has been, he's probably had a better game than Giroud has. Like,
well, he absolutely roasted Vermaelen
twice
the end, didn't he?
Yeah, and then, you know, did nothing with in the end. But for me, you know, when you look at Robin Van Persie, Thierry Henry, you know, go back to Ian Wright, but even Adebayor, I mean, some of the guys that have played center forward, you know, recently, the thing that's frustrating is that is a position.
Apologies, that's my phone. I'm going to get rid of it.
Oh, no problem. Just throw it out the window. That is a position. You don't compete at the highest level without a top striker. I can't think of a club that's successful at a really high level and doesn't have someone that can bang in 25 goals or 20 goals a season. I mean, you know, I know City shares it around a little bit, but they've got plenty of guys who are capable of that. United has a guy that I think could do a job for us, definitely. You know, Chelsea... Chelsea were their most devastating when Drogba was playing for them and he was on top form, and they made it a priority. They went out and got Demba Ba. So I this is the thing that really bothers me about Arsene Wenger. I'm going to ignore everything he says to the media, because everything he says now is almost like it's almost like a practical joke. Like, he can't believe any of the things he says, and I'm just waiting. I'm wondering if he's just sitting back thinking like, I wonder if I can get away with saying this time, because none of it makes any sense. But the thing that frustrates me about Arsene Wenger the most is he came out with something he said that maybe I went over the top on, but he said Abu Dhabi deserves a chance because he's done nothing wrong, you know, and he had this whole thing about he's been through hell, he's really mentally strong.
But the immediate response was, what did Gilberto Silva do wrong? What did Robert Pires do wrong?
Robert Pires, right. And again, I'm not saying Diaby should be given up on. What I'm saying is that is not an acceptable reason to be making personnel decisions.
I don't think so at all. And I've been tossing around as well. People rightly perhaps say you need to move on from past decisions that have been made, especially regarding the squad. I can't move on, because I think unless you understand why some of those decisions were made, then the whole operation of the club starts feeling inexplicable.
The Dhabi situation's bizarre as well, because it's absolutely...
But Dave, go back to the assessing for a second, and then we'll come back to the Dhabi. Look, Fabregas to me was sold because the player was made a promise of stay one more year, if we win something, we'll you'll have cemented your legacy, and then we'll let you go. That to me is not an acceptable way to promise stuff to a guy who still has 3 or so years to run on his deal, and especially not when you then get held over a barrel by a club who end up paying a lot less than he's clearly worth. And it's not like the favour even gets returned. They're not shit hot on sending a David Villa back in response. And I feel like Arsenal are mug punters in the market when it comes to this sort of stuff. We're the club who end up playing corporation tax because we're so goody two shoes. We're not cynical on the pitch. We're like this schoolboyish.
Give United Arsenal branded notepaper a go with the FA complaining about financial fair play.
Absolutely, yeah. I feel like we're just this sort of daft choir boy. But going back to the Diaby thing, like,
continually gets Roger by the priest.
Oh, Jesus. Lucky we got that explicit warning. Elliot, you said during the game that, players at Arsenal, you know, their reputation's improve immeasurably while they're out of the squad. And you see that with a guy like Diaby. He's not a bad player, but this idea that he's this kind of ingredient X that makes the midfield,
Let's say it like
this. It's just
Tim.
Wrong. That's wrong. He holds on to the ball too long.
So
he picks the wrong decisions. Sometimes
labored.
He plays well and sometimes he plays badly. Idea that he's a much better player than Song, I think is bullshit.
Well, can we just say it this way? Because this is the way I look at it. Let's pretend for a minute that Abu Dhabi had absolutely no injury problem and he was regularly reliable as the player he is. I would still believe we needed a defensive midfielder.
Yeah.
It's not like Diaby's injury problems are the reason
he's,
we're
he's
fucked.
Not a defensive midfielder. He said
Diaby's
so himself.
Not the player. He's not the player we need. So, like, you know, there are all these people saying Arsene Wenger took a gamble on Diaby's fitness, and I've said that too. But in reality, Arsene Wenger took a gamble on Diaby as a player because he's not the player we need in midfield. We have no steal in the middle of the pitch.
Well,
we got overrun in the first half.
He took a gamble, I think, on Diaby covering for Wilshere because he's actually much closer to Wilshere in that he's a guy who turns and carries and looks for mm-hmm. a pass. So that in terms of
much slower, but yes,
yeah, but theoretically, I think they do the same sort of job. And then you go, well, who is a defensive midfield? And then it's Arteta who's a repurposed attacking mid, and Coquelin. And Coquelin was decent against Swansea.
He was okay today.
The notion there aren't better players in world football who are affordable to Arsenal is a fallacy. Yeah, and people go, well, don't get upset about what Arsene says in the press conferences, and like, you know, I don't really get upset about him not, or I don't get upset at all really about any of it because I just think it's absurd.
Clearly,
he lied. But when he says, well, we could afford 90% of the players, and you go, well, I just don't believe that you are only therefore then creaming off this incredible talent that we somehow spoke. Because then how do you explain to me Santos, and how do you explain to me Park? What did the Park scouting report actually say? I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I touched on it when we were watching the game. It's this, he's so contradictory now. It's embarrassing. He just blurts off these ridiculous, meaningless catchphrases now that he makes him a parody of himself. But
he said Diaby was like a new signing, yeah. And you get like that one is beyond.
But to touch on what you were saying about Santos and Park, he continually bangs on about super quality, and will only add to the squad if it's a player of top bracket who will, you know, appreciably improve, you know, the squad immediately. Well, that's completely at odds with the fucking dearth of fucking mediocre players we've got in the team. Like, as you say, fatty, like, you know.
I think we've got an abundance, not a dearth. That's the opposite.
Yeah, abundance. Fucking poached from behind the bins in Turkey.
But you say Gervinho. Poached, it was still like €7 million.
Yeah,
like
seven
no
and a half,
resale
yeah.
value. And yeah, there's plenty of guys we turn. How much was Cahill, you know?
You know what, Tim, though? This is the thing that infuriates me ultimately, is just like there's all this. There's a cycle, right? Player comes in, player isn't good enough, player gets a little bit of time to prove he's not good enough, and then everybody turns on him. You know what I mean? That's the Gervinho model. That was the Schmack model.
Scalacci.
I don't think anybody was ever on board with Scalacci.
I thought Scalacci could do a job, yeah.
Looked right age, Champions League experience.
International.
All right, well, so neither of you guys are going to be our scouts for the next round of buys, but, you know, I think...
I'd have bought you Vincent Kompany. Don't rule me out yet.
You look at what we were today and what we were against City, and I can't help but come up with it. It's like everyone wants to praise our second half, but our second half struck me as what a plucky mid-table team does.
Yeah.
They get yelled at in the dressing room. They make a fist of it in the second half.
Well, Southampton came out second half and got a draw.
That's what I was going to say, is that the problem for mid-table teams is usually no matter how hard they try or how much they push, they lack that extra quality to get the goals to change the game. And that's exactly what we are right now. We're a team that has enough quality to get ourselves back in a game, but we don't have the goals in us. So, I mean, you know, people talk about how great we were against Swansea. For as great as we were against Swansea, it took a 20-yard, you know, half-volley belter from Jack to win it in the, whatever it was, 86th, 87th minute. I mean, for all that dominance, we were one Michu roasting of a centre back away from being out of the FA Cup.
Isn't there like a strange stat though that says we scored more times this year than we did at the same time last year? But I think that's slightly muddled by the fact we absolutely smashed Newcastle and Southampton, wasn't it?
Which it's crazy. I'm gonna tell you something. If you take away, and I know you can't take away because we did score them, but if you take away three games where we scored, I think 18 goals in three games or something, 7, 6, and 5, what does that come out to? Right? 18 goals?
You're asking very much the wrong men if you want adding up.
No, nah. 7 against Newcastle, 6 against Southampton, 5 against the Scum. And I'm not saying you can take those away, but that's 18 goals. I took those away just to look. We'd be like 15th in goals scored or something. So we've had more nil-nils already this season than we did last season. You know, I think that's more of an indictment. That's a better, a more telling way of looking at our struggles. And it's frustrating because I think we've touched on this before. You expect Arsenal to defend comically, like a clown car, but like you also expect to see them score goals and create excitement, and we need that. The fact that Arsene Wenger hasn't done anything in the transfer market yet bothers me too, because, you know, guys, if we go out and we buy two or three key players on January 28th, if we've already lost to Chelsea and City and Liverpool and, you know, who knows, Brighton maybe even, I mean, what's the point? There's no point buying someone January 30th that we needed January 1st.
Well, but there is. He made the exact reason what he thinks the point wait until then is, which is that the price comes down, which I found just unbelievable as well, because if you look at plenty of the deals that went through late-ish in the last few windows, the late ones, I think, are often inflated.
Yeah.
Especially if you're talking about trying to bring in a striker. And even if you start bidding the kind of money clubs are interested in, you're leaving them with then no chance to repair the holes in their own squads, and they're going to be even more reluctant. I think some of those lower-level guys maybe move towards the end, but not the super, super exceptional talent.
I'll tell you what I am.
We're never in for the first of January.
You guys know I love the Champions League, and I am dreading the tie with Bayern Munich because I'm just terrified.
Oh, yeah, they'll scuff us.
How many weeks away is that?
It's sooner than it needs to be. 4 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, somewhere around mid-February.
My heart just actually skipped then.
Buying a 4-0 up.
Oh. Well then, I honestly don't know where to go with this, because I feel like we've said a lot of this stuff before. What, Dave? Do you think we'll do any business?
DM me. I think if we do anything, I was listening to Football Weekly Extra on the walkover. Philippe Auclair thought there might be a chance of DM me, which would still be a deeply underwhelming signing, and again, not something I'm terribly certain we need, because again, as you pointed out, he's not particularly a defensive-minded midfielder. He's more kind of like in the Jack and the Diaby role. So certainly what we're crying out for, which is a new centre-back, because I think Vermaelen has been disgraceful this season in his performances.
What, really? Centre-back, you think it's the problem?
Well, no. That was,
if we buy a centre-back before a striker and a defensive midfielder, I'll shit my pants.
The centre-forward is absolutely the main priority, but I'm desperate for another centre-half and certainly desperate for a DM. So we need to make bare minimum three very good signings can immediately come into the first team, but we'll probably get Diame. He'll be a decent-ish squad.
Elliot, what's your take on it? I know you don't like naming names. What about this 30 million man who's been rumoured?
You know, the reason I feel like there has to be a big signing on the cards is, I mean, first of all, it's not like we have three or four mediocre centre forwards. We have one mediocre centre forward, and his backup is Per Mertesacker.
What's your explanation for Podolski never being? I know he's ill today, but why? I don't understand. He tried once in the Sunderland game, and then we just seem to have stopped.
I don't know. I mean, I guess in an emergency he could go in there, but it's clear that Wenger doesn't see him as that kind of player. And you know, he's obviously much better finisher than Giroud. You know, the thing, not to get off topic, because I will tell you my theory on the transfer market quickly, but I do want to go back to slating Giroud some more.
Hey, he's a big fan of this podcast. You just cost me a listener.
Yeah, well, he can send you one of those special pictures of himself. The problem I have is, you know, people talk about Schmack, and Schmack has become this like hate figure as how awful he was. But I'm going to tell you something. Schmack's hold up play is better than Giroud's. Period. I don't care what anyone says. Okay. Now you could argue that Giroud is better with his feet, and I think there's some examples of that. But the problem is, when Giroud is in there, I feel like we try to lump it up to him. He doesn't do anything with it when we do that. When we play the ball into his feet, he's not clinical. I mean, in the Swansea match, he kind of served up that bouncing layoff to Jack that everybody was praising as an amazing touch. I thought that was overstating it a bit. But the reverse happened earlier, where Jack gave him a beautiful layoff and he kind of stepped on the ball, looked for someone else to give it to, and lost it. He doesn't make decisions quickly. He doesn't finish his chances when it matters. He's not strong in the air, and we're not strong at crossing. So I guess it's such a round peg in a square hole.
He's not strong in the air. Fuck me. Did you see that powder puff header with
that? Was awful.
15 minutes ago, it was incredible.
Not for the first time this year. I mean, I think he scored one really good header, and so I read somewhere
scored
that
a good
he, like,
header against Fulham, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, but he didn't score a lot of headed goals.
No, one last year in France.
Yeah. But here's – so really quickly, the reason I keep expecting a big, big signing to come is two things. One, it's reached the point where even Arsene Wenger with blinders on can't help but see that we need a striker.
I don't accept that, but I dearly hope you're right.
Here's my number two. You know, you can criticize Kroenke, Gazidis, Fox. They all deserve criticism, no question. But the one thing I will
don't
argue
forget is, Law.
Well, I'm going to leave him out because I'm about to qualify my criticism of those other guys. Law is just a mess.
Allegedly.
You have to agree with this. They may not care about Arsenal that much, but they care about their money, and they care about their revenue, and they care about their profit, and they're not dumb people. They may not be football men, but they're not dumb. And the thing I would say is they're trying to grow a fan base in Asia. They're trying to expand, quote unquote, the brand globally. And without a star striker banging in goals and without Champions League and getting knocked out by fourth division opposition in cups, you don't expand the brand. You don't get new sponsorship deals. You don't sell shirts.
Well, I've certainly said on here a couple of times that the brand, the problem is as well, you know, if you work in marketing, which I don't, but I know people who do, if you were to draw a brand eye for Arsenal, some of the adjectives on it would be pretty uninspiring. It would be kind of, you know, fragile and selling club and all sorts of stuff that's pretty negative, which makes it harder and harder for you to like you say, start creaming off that lovely Malaysian money.
You remedy that by bringing it. We don't have anyone whose name can go up on the marquee. Wilshire's name maybe someday could. I don't accept that Cazorla is a name you can put on the marquee. I think it's got to be a striker who can score 30 goals, you know, or at least 20, 25 in a season. And so to me, you know, it's just deductive reasoning. We don't have a striker. We're not scoring goals the way we need to. We're at risk of losing our place in competitions that keep our brand prestigious. So if I was running the club and said, you know what, I don't want to splash $30 million on a single player, but if I don't, my investment is going to suffer. So
that's very much the problem, I think, Elliot, is that I think if you listen to like Phil over at the AST, like he'll tell you that even if Kroenke was to sell up now with the club where it is, he stands to almost double his investment. So it's actually quite a marginal return he'd be looking at for that up or down on whether he chucks extra money into the market. Now, I completely agree with you that in terms of the perception of the club amongst other players, amongst our own fans, in order to kind of put fear into teams, which I don't think fear as much anymore, we need guys like that. However, you have to, I think, if you want to kind of predict what Arsenal is going to do in any given situation, you only need to look at history, because I think they are remarkably consistent in their approach. I said to Dave earlier, it's like they operate from a playbook, both in terms of the messaging they give to the fans as the season rolls along. It's kind of, you know, repetitive sort of narrative, because the seasons we've had have been very similar over the last few years. I just don't see them doing it. If you look at their record buys, they've been 14 million universally. Nasri, Arshavin, Will Tord are all about that sort of mark. I'd like every fan love to see them do that. I just don't buy it. And I think that in the past you've had talk of them throwing in these big bids for Mario Götze and Jan M. Villa, and further back in the day they supposedly tried to get David Villa from when he was at Valencia for about 20 mil. But I think those are sort of bids they never expected to be accepted. I think they were kind of like weird cold call kind of things you just throw out there on the off chance it might come off. I just don't buy it. I think it's absolutely what we need, but you're right as well to say striker, because that, other than goalkeeper, has the biggest potential for impacting results, doesn't it? But it's tough to think where they would even look for one at this point. You know, guys like Cavani and that are clearly preposterous
you
targets.
You could maybe get
have,
someone but, like Llorente, but then he's very much a how big a step up is that?
I think Llorente is a done deal at Juventus pretty much, and again is like he's probably better than Giroud, but you know, we had like the, again not wanting to witter on about it, but we had probably the third best striker in the world, didn't we, if you consider Messi and Ronaldo to be strikers, and he ain't here no more.
Well, and you can look at it and you can say, I mean, that's what wins game, because Van Persie is winning games for United. You know, I'm not saying all on his own, I'm not saying they're not a good squad without him, I'm just saying, you know, he won us games last year. We don't have him this year, and we're not winning those games. I mean, he finishes that chance that Giroud didn't. It's 1-0 to the Arsenal.
The difference is as well, Elliot, is if we had a guy like Rooney, right? And I don't like Rooney as a person, but he's clearly a reasonably effective player. Well, he's a brilliant player, but plays in patches. If we had a guy like Rooney, we wouldn't add to him with a guy like Van Persie. We'd just go, well, Rooney's a guy who's going to carry us, right? Like, it's that ethos I think we have of, like, what is the minimum we can achieve our goals with? It genuinely feels like that to me. There's never a sense of, like, well, hey, chaps, we're looking strong right now, So what we're going to do to really put the knife to the throats of the other teams is add to it. What we tend to say is, could we get by without one of these players and replace them with someone who does a similar job but costs less? You know, that seems to me the ethos.
And Dave, I'd be curious if you agree with this, but I ultimately I think what really frustrates me and the reason I'm at the end of my rope with Wenger is this. Wouldn't you agree that 4 or 5 seasons ago we had less money to spend, less resources than we have now? I mean, would we all agree with that?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, before the new commercial deal was
right. Yeah. Okay. So here's the weird thing. 4 or 5 years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, when we had less money to spend, arguably, in the market,
we had much stronger
teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I felt like we were genuinely going to compete for a title. I mean, genuinely believed that, thought we could do it. And if you look at the history, we were in some title chases. We may have faded late or had some things happen to us, but we were in those races. Now, when we supposedly, you know, the stadium debt's not as much of an issue anymore, we have more resources, the team has gotten dramatically weaker, and we're nowhere near a title challenge. I mean, it sounds even silly to be talking about the title. Yeah. And so what I can't understand is at a time when arguably we should have been able to put our foot on the gas and take that one step up, we've taken 3 or 4 steps back.
But sorry, Dave, I'm going to let you come to this. But this is exactly what I mean by we operate in the same way. Because during that period where the cries were, add 2 more. That was always what people asked for, 2 more players. They wanted a goalkeeper and still then a DM. And
put a 1 in front of that too now.
And we wouldn't do it. and you think that they're still operating exactly the same way, but like the chasm's opened up further. But yeah, Dave, sorry, respond to that.
Yeah, it's just it's indefensible to have more resources now, to financially never be stronger. The Emirates was always used as an excuse why we're hamstrung. Like, well, you know, now we've got these new commercial deals, we're getting at least 30 million extra in revenue every season, if you're to believe that. What Elliot said, look back to 2007, 2008. Look at the quality of bench we had then. We had, you know, for all his faults, Nicholas Bentner was occasionally, his goal scoring record through the middle was pretty decent. We had Eduardo, we had Rzitski.
You're still so gay for Bentner. We had
Adebayor, we had Van Persie, we had Fabregas, we had Nasri. You know, we had such a superior team. And now, you know.
Not in 2007, we didn't have Nasri.
Yeah, Nasri was, I think he signed 2008. But we had a far, far superior team, first 11 and squad. And now, you know, we've never needed, you know, investment so badly. And the continued inaction makes my head hurt.
Elliot,
so
do you believe any of this? I mean, I don't think I do, but you've seen people float the idea that maybe Arsene knows he's kind of reaching, you know, he would only have one more year to go after this anyway on his contract and doesn't want to spend because he wants to leave a kind of a... the mythical war chest for whoever comes in next. Do you see that?
If anyone actually believes that, they're out of their fucking mind. Because first of all, you want to leave. All right, yeah, let's leave the next manager with £30 million to spend and a 6th place finish and not in Europe. Yeah, that's a superior situation to leaving them with Edinson Cavani and European football. I mean, that's just idiotic. Not that we're getting Cavani or even considering Cavani. That's not my point.
The one thing that terrifies me more than anything is that Wenger will actually sign on our contract extension. That scares the shit out of me.
He won't. Honestly, he won't be able to, because if things continue this way, I mean, there are still tons of pockets of you know, resistance where people, you know, still will blindly praise Wenger. And by the way, I love Arsene Wenger for everything he's done. Yeah, I hate that we always have to qualify this. We are not people that hate Arsene Wenger, don't respect the man, don't appreciate everything he's done, haven't enjoyed his time at the club. This is based purely on the last few seasons and what we consider to be a dereliction of duty. But like, I really believe if it continues going this way, there will be such a mutinous atmosphere and such a repudiation of his, you know, job there that I don't think it'll be sustainable. I mean, even an owner as out of touch as Kroenke can't have Wenger out chants and Wenger out banners and boos.
But would do you think he would even know? Like, I wonder what the feedback loop is. Yes. What you think Ivan would speak to him?
I look, at very least, he gets a 1-page paper put in front of his face every morning on what's happening at Arsenal. You know, even if it's just a cursory glance, if the paper just reads we're fucked, they're burning it all down, he would do something.
People have said to me that the relationship between Ivan and Arsene is actually far from sort of dances and handshakes and songs. So I wonder how much truth there is.
Business is traditionally done because I've been doing it wrong.
Yeah, I lost another one of my analogies fell on stony ground there, unfortunately. I said to Dave during the game, as you talked about the sort of relentless positivity that some give, I think it's actually damaging, because I think it then polarises any sort of debate at all around the manager. Sure. But I said to Dave, if 5 years ago, let's say Arsene had chose to leave to go to Paris Saint-Germain or wherever, and a new guy had come in, I won't even hypothetically say who that person is, let's just, a blank-faced manager came in, and over the subsequent 5 years made all the same decisions as Arsene, but let's say won the FA Cup. But otherwise, we've got the same squad as we have now. The only difference is this guy's won the FA Cup. Would you take that guy? And to me, logically, the answer should be, well, we'd be better off where than where we are, because we'd have won an FA Cup and had a good day out. But I think there's a lot of people who go, no, I'd rather have Arsene, because they're more wed to the idea of him being the manager than they are success necessarily.
Well, I think Arsene's one last big, not one last, that's not fair, but I think one of his big strength is that I think he still has he's very highly regarded within the football world, very highly regarded by players generally, I believe. I mean, obviously, I don't know, but that's what you read. And so I think that Arsene himself does elevate the stature of the club. I mean, having a manager that is as highly regarded as Arsene Wenger makes the club bigger. Just as getting Pep Guardiola at Bayern Munich, already a very big club, is going to heap huge global attention on them. I think if we had some unknown manager managing Arsenal right now with the same kind of results we're getting, I think some of the prestige of the club would even be further diminished. But the thing I don't understand is Arsene isn't even doing the things Arsene used to do. I mean, he signed Arshavin in January when we were miles behind fourth place because we needed a boost to stay in the Champions League, and it worked. Like, how is this situation any different? Like, why do something different now than you did then?
It's harder. You just had one semi-decent Aston Villa side in front of you now. Now we've got two far superior teams in front of us.
But Dave,
Chelsea,
it's hard to put your finger on this, and obviously we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but didn't even with the purchase of Arshavin, you get the feeling his hand was almost forced? Like, there was kind of the sense behind the scenes of...
Negotiations were absolutely torturous, ridiculous
but
torturous.
But as they
like
to be with
he was
all
being
of
forced,
our...
isn't it? Yeah, oh, I don't know.
I mean, Elliot, we've talked before about the other thing that gets endlessly discussed is who's responsible for this kind of inertia when it comes
to
player.
This is the most depressing podcast ever. It's off. There must be some ray of light we can inject.
I'm pressing
into
on,
this.
And then you can try and find a positive, Guna Family Boy. the other thing that gets discussed ad nauseum is who's responsible for that inertia. Is it Arsene or is it the board? I think if you kind of use Occam's razor, it's really hard to see why it would be the board almost. Like, I don't. Nasri is the only one who I can think it genuinely felt like perhaps his hand was being forced. Like the others, I don't know why you wouldn't believe it was the manager. And I'll tell you for why. Is if you think of how proud Arsene is and how like kind of intractable he is in most of his dealings, if he was year after year being forced to do something he didn't want to do, he'd leave. Like, he would simply just go, I can't operate under these conditions, because he's the ultimate, like Ferguson, he has to have 100% control.
We can all just say it now. We're somewhat dancing around it. I mean, we can all just say we want a new manager, right? I mean, I want him to step down in May at the end of the season. Yeah. I love the man and respect him. He's given me the happiest footballing memories of my life. But his time is finished. I think his time at top level football is gone. I think he's a relic who can no longer keep. I think all the new methods that he brought in, all the
I'm,
new
I'll
thinking,
what,
the ideology
I'm
in 1996, that's gone. Like, the game is passing by. The reason we used to like stampede past your mid-level teams and your bottom place teams in 96, 97, 98s, because, you know, the levels of fitness in the Premier League were nowhere near what they are now. Like, you could go out and fucking trample Derby, because in the last 20 minutes it'd fall apart because it'd be on the pie and the pints the night before. You can't do that now, because teams like Swansea and Everton have got, you know, vastly superior levels of fitness than what teams had 10 years ago. And, you know, the gap has been closed with teams below us, and it's been widening the teams above us. So he simply has to step down. He's the one, the massive key strength he used to have was, you know, unearthing diamonds in the transfer market. He can no longer do that. He seems to mentally fucking beam this, you know, defensive fragility and this, you know, level of timidness on, you know, two or three different sides now. I love the man.
This was your attempt to make it more positive,
well,
was it?
Yeah, this, it's time we go. It's time we go. Fuck positivity.
You know what blows my mind is, look, there has been this, like, company line that the fact that Arsene Wenger has kept us in the top four is nothing short of miraculous. And then, like, Liverpool's drop out of the top four is kind of used as proof that that's the case.
But Liverpool are level with us. Liverpool are level with us today. Points,
well, no,
right?
But I mean, just over the past few years, you know, you've heard this said a lot, like, you know, no, we haven't won a title, but what Arsene Wenger has done, just keeping us in the top four, is nothing short of miraculous.
But what has that brought us? I mean, it's helped pay down the debt, no doubt, and it's helped the owners sell up for a huge profit, and it'll help Stan have a good business. But in terms of, like, winning pots, what's it brought us fans? Or what's it brought those players who were there? I mean, even Liverpool, the comedy side that people absolutely derided, they barely did, but they managed to win that League Cup they were in, you know, which is more than us. You can't, it's easy to, you know, we talked about it last time on the podcast, are Liverpool still in with a shout of fourth? Absolutely. If you think we are, then they certainly are.
No, they're not, because we are.
They're level on points.
We are now 11 points.
Game in hand.
We're 11 points behind Chelsea now, and 6 clear points behind Spurs, so Liverpool aren't going to catch up. You know, both us and Liverpool are out the race of fourth, because it'll be Chelsea,
you think,
then
you think
Spurs.
Now we are.
Yeah, I think so. I think if there's no new signings brought in between now and the end of January, then certainly the race for fourth is gone.
Well, and you're not mentioning Everton, who I think you rule out at your peril, because
yeah.
I do. That's a good
yeah.
Everton.
I mean, yeah, they're a very good side. I just think their squad is a little on the small side, but yeah.
Yeah, kind of like us.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing I just think, not to continually harp on how shit Giroud is, but he's totally shit. I hadn't mentioned it in like 6 or 7 minutes. But, you know, look at it this way. Start naming clubs in the Premier League that have a better striker than we do. It used to be maybe you could name one or two, if that. Now,
Chelsea, United, City, Spurs.
Everton, would you say Jelovic is better?
Jelovic has been fairly poor this season, but.
Definitely Liverpool, obviously.
Fulham with Berbatov, arguably.
You know, I mean, yeah, I think Berbatov.
Swansea. If you class Michu as a centre forward, then certainly Swansea.
Michu for Giroud any day of the
week.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what
the point is, we don't have to necessarily do the exercise. You know, I'd probably take that guy at West Ham who they have on loan. Tim already has his shirt, so it would be convenient.
Oh, but, I honestly don't even know where that shirt is anymore.
But you know, look, we don't have to do the exercise, but it's simply the point that you're not a top four side if you don't have a top four striker, and we may not have a top seven or top eight striker. If you ask me why our top four bid will fail, it's not because, and I'm not saying it will definitely fail, but I would say it's not because of how we defend.
Do you think it will fail? Seeing as we're all putting it all out there, do you think we'll finish fourth at the moment?
I think we will know by the end of January. I think if Spurs beat United today and we lose one of those next two, West Ham or Liverpool, I don't think we're going to get in the top four. But if Spurs lose to United and we can beat West Ham and Liverpool, because obviously some of this is dependent on whether we do business or not, but if January ends with us 10 points behind and still having to compete in the FA Cup and still having to compete 2 games in the Champions League, I can't see how we make up the ground.
I think that's why as well. Like, I mean, going back to what Dave said, I'm sure there'll be some people listening to this who get angry about it. But as much as anything, like, I don't think it's outrageous to suggest that it would be interesting and different to have another narrative, really, to be able to watch different formations and different ideas enacted on the pitch and to see someone take a different approach in the market as well. Like, I think the club is crying out for that personally.
Renewal. You know, that would be the word I'd use. You know,
yeah, because it's coming anyway, right? It's coming down the train tracks, whatever.
Right.
Like, so the question is it now,
except
or is it in 18 months? You know,
my biggest response to that, Tim, would just be that even if you still like Arsene Wenger, and obviously we all have admiration and respect for him, what I would suggest is that the club needs a period of renewal. It needs to change the narrative, as you said. It needs there just needs sort of an infusion of optimism, hope, change, all that stuff that I read somewhere on a poster. And I don't think we can get that without a new manager.
But I'd argue that should be the case at any single football club in Europe, with the exception of Manchester United, because, you know, 16 years at one club is, of course it's the exception, not the norm, unless you are literally the greatest manager in the history of the game, which Ferguson probably is, because he's peerlessly adaptable. He's, the man's 71 years of age, and he can still adapt, and he can still relate to players in their 20s, and he can still tactically change. Wenger can't.
There's definitely an argument, and a correct argument, that long-term stability is hugely helpful. But by the same token, there's nothing contradictory to say that you can also go on too long and have stagnation and famously jadedness. I've been in my job for a decade, and to the thought of adding another 6 years on, there's no doubt you would. I think it's natural to think anyone doing that amount of time.
Expect an interesting phone call on Monday morning.
That was not a resignation.
Am I resigning live on air? Is that how this works?
But look around. Look at some of the biggest, most successful clubs in Europe: Real Madrid, Barcelona, Chelsea. Unfortunately, over the past, I'm just talking about recently over the past few years. Bayern Munich, AC Milan. I mean, there's been a lot of managerial turnover at those clubs without a huge effect. I mean, Frank Rijkaard was successful at Barcelona. It started to stagnate at the end. They brought in Pep. We know how good Pep was. Tito Villanova is having a great season this season. Bayern Munich have had a lot of managerial change. They've been fairly successful. Same with Inter Milan. Same with AC Milan. Chelsea, as much as people say their managerial changes have hurt them, yes, they may be more erratic in their seasons from season to season, but every season they win something significant. So the notion that you have to have continuity of manager for 25 years to be successful, I agree with you, that is the exception, not the rule.
And really, if we've gotten a new manager, what really will we be losing? Because I think this season we're going to finish 5th, 6th or 7th, so all you're losing if we get a new manager of the great Wenger dynasty, whatever it is now, is fucking, you might miss out on Thursday nights in Channel 5 in your fucking Europa League. The current stage we're at now, we've not got a shitload to gamble with.
The devil's advocate position would be, because I can hear people saying this already, is that, he's qualified as 14 years in a row for the Champions League. The first time he misses it, you immediately give him the bullet. Is that not unfair?
Yeah, but
that's such a straw man argument.
For
a club of our size with 60,000 fans a week, the highest, match day revenue in England, charging fans the highest ticket prices in world football, fourth being the minimum recommendation, which is now becoming accepted, is, it's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful that our site should ever be taken away from the title.
Dave, it totally ignores the notion of trajectory, too. It's not an issue of what the results are. People act like it's just about, at the end of the season, a balance sheet. Football's not a balance sheet, and I don't mean financially even. I mean just results. It's about game in, game out. Do you beat your rivals? Are you fun to watch? Do you have players you want to go see?
But don't you think it's incredible how that has become accepted, Elliot? I mean, during the discussion of, when Arsene was saying, again, with complete sophistry to me, the players we want to buy, we can't buy anyway because they're Champions League Cup tied. I mean, that would, A, suggest that we have traditionally bought from clubs that were in the Champions League anyway,
which is historically just not true in a lot of cases.
It's not completely true. And B, he also talked about to achieve our goal of finishing in the top four. What about our goal of trying to win the FA Cup? Or
to me though, I mean, even that is reductive. And by the way, I'm just curious: did you have sophistry written down on a piece of paper saying use this at some point, or did
head is full of those sort of $10 words? I just spit them out.
That's brilliant. I think it's to me a season. Everybody gets hung up on trophies, and there's no question that that's the goal, obviously. But a season is filled with a lot of games on the way to those trophies that you want to enjoy. You want to watch players you really care about, players you like watching. You want to see a team that doesn't make you want to pull your hair out. Watching a team that leads the league in goals conceded from individual errors is exasperating. Watching a team that has a third-rate center forward week in, week out, try to masturbate with a flaccid penis is exhausting.
This is getting dark. We've got to wrap this shit up. This is getting dark.
I can't.
I bet you've got like a 16 inch plasma screen, and you've just got that GIF on the fucking loop on it.
Giroud.
Oh, that's Van Persie scored.
But this is the point. You watch Jack Wilshere against Swansea, and for me, it was like a light bulb went off when I watched Jack against Swansea.
Sorry,
like,
that is Van Persie literally just scored at White Hart Lane. A bullet header at the back post.
Is that the definition of conflicted?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Is conflicted what happens when you want to cut bits of yourself off?
This is the portion of the podcast where self-harm occurs.
That's a really good thing.
But, you know, I guess all I was trying to say in the most graphic, explicit, and incoherent way possible is that I don't just want a season to be about the destination. I want it to be about how we get there. And if you plot the trajectory of Arsenal over the past few seasons, we become more frustrating, less watchable, less of something you really look forward to with sort of this optimistic excitement. And while we all, you know, hope springs eternal and so on and so forth, you know, I have never had a Champions League tie where I didn't think we have a puncher's chance. I'm excited for this. I have no hope of us beating Bayern Munich. And that's the first time I can say that.
Yeah, neither do I. Dave?
Yeah, do.
God. All right, we'll wrap up there.
Woo! Pie time!
Yeah, if we haven't shed half the audience, I suppose we'll see you back in February when Elliot says he'll be willing to shit or get off the pot and tell us whether we're going to finish in the Champions League spots or not. Well, I've already said I don't care about that, so there we go. Boys, cheers for having you. Up the Arsenal.
Up the Arsenal.